Notice that with the passive voice, you get these kinds of sentences, right? Mistakes were made, the email was deleted, the witness will be examined, the files have been removed. You know that you can do this with the passive voice. And what am I doing? I am not naming the person or entity that did the thing that happened. That is a key element, a key characteristic of the passive voice. You can write and not say who did it. And if you want to say who did it, you can still stick it into a passive voice sentence, but you have to tack it on with a prepositional phrase at the end, by. Right? So that turns out to be useful for professional legal writers. The actor is unknown or irrelevant, right? We don't know who did this thing, and it doesn't matter who did this thing. The police were notified. So the important idea in that sentence is that the police were notified. We don't know who notified them, or it is not relevant at this time. Your focus is on the thing and what happened to the thing. Layton's account was frozen, not Anderson's. We're not talking about who did it. We're focusing on the fact that it was Layton's account that was frozen. And finally, you can use it to try to avoid the appearance of responsibility. All the computer files had been lost, and that is the stereotypical, you know, politician's sentence, right? Mistakes were made, right? Avoids the taking of any responsibility. Now, if you use the passive voice to hide responsibility a lot, readers are not faked out. Eventually, readers realize everything in your statement of facts happened in the passive voice. Nobody ever does anything. It all just happens. People are going to figure that out. But in limited doses, you can try to avoid the appearance of responsibility. The other thing I want you to notice about these three examples is the actor in the sentence could be put back in a prepositional phrase at the end, but it has been deliberately left out. So if you need to convey the same information, the passive voice is always longer. Always, because you have to tack that actor on in a prepositional phrase at the end. So the police were notified by Chris Green. If that's your what you want to get across, Chris Green notified the police is always going to be two words shorter. Layton's account, not Anderson's, was frozen by the bank. The company deleted Layton's employment file, not Anderson's. Sorry. All the computer files had been lost by CPD. CPD had lost all the computer files. So if you don't need the passive voice, why not put it in the active? It's always going to be more concise. So here I changed, were authorized by the employer to the if the employer authorized. It's always going to be more concise in the active voice. Now, nominalizations is a big, ugly, fancy word, but what it essentially means is you could have used a verb, but you made it into a noun. You brought suit against when you could have said sued, and you said applying limits to when you could have said limiting. That's all it means. Nominal means noun. Nominalize means to make it a noun. And nominalization is the thing you made into a noun. They are very common in legal writing. I don't know exactly why. I have some theories, but they are very common. We don't pay. We always make a payment for some reason. We don't settle. We enter a settlement. We don't assist. We provide assistance to. And I hope we would even say help. Because nominalization is a big, ugly word, people have come up with other terms. So when I was in college in an English class, my English professor circled a word in my paper and drew a line out to the margin and wrote nom, period. I didn't know what that was. I didn't look it up. I didn't go ask him what it was. So there you go. It was a nominalization. I think Brian Garner calls them hidden verbs. I know another writer who calls them buried verbs. Get it? It could have been a verb, but you turned it into a noun and then you had to help it out with other verbs. I read a book in which the authors called them vampires because they suck the blood out of your writing. And for your entertainment, sometime go on to YouTube and search up zombie nouns, because an English teacher has made a very clever and entertaining video in which she talks about nominalizations and how they kill your writing because they are zombie nouns. And yes, she says, they are beloved by lawyers. So they are common in law. For every one of these, you could easily think of the verb that could simplify it. Make a recommendation, recommend. Make an argument, argue, and so on. Why do we do nominalizations? I think it's because we think conceptually. So we think of things and concepts, and so when we write, we use the nouns and that match the things and concepts we were thinking, right? So maybe I have an expectation in my head, and my expectation is that there's going to be an objection. So I write, counsel's expectation was that the lawyer for the defendant would make an objection, when I could have written, counsel expected the lawyer for the defendant to object. And I've saved multiple words. Now, what about counsel for the lawyer for the defendant? Could I just say defendant's lawyer? Maybe I could. We're coming to that one, by the way. Shortened compound prepositions. Did you know that there's such a thing as a compound preposition? It's a preposition on steroids, basically, on the basis that they are also very common in legal writing. I don't know why we lawyers tend to like to use them. I think they do make your writing sound more formal, and sometimes you're committed to sounding formal, and you certainly don't want to sound informal, but most of these could be shortened to one word. The senior attorney said that she wanted to discuss Kenton's work in connection with the disclosure statement with a view toward improving Kenton's writing. Well, I think in connection with could just be on. And I hope that with a view toward, I hope I would just write so. I think you should have compound prepositions on your writing antenna, on your writing radar, so that you notice them as you edit.